Díaz Márquez. Díaz Márquez.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Us Podcast.
A podcast about us.
It's all of us, bro.
It's all of us, bro. Woo!
And today we have a very special episode. I mean, every episode's pretty special.
But this one's just a lot more important.
Only because we have... this one's a lot more important.
Forget the rest of them. This one's
and you'll know, well, for everyone that's already seen the title, you already know why Chris thinks this is very important. But this is also our first guest episode with more than one guest. So this is going to be... This is new for us, so we'll see.
We're also debuting our first white person.
Congratulations. Oh, yeah. Woo-hoo. First white people of the podcast.
It's an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
to represent the white community.
Whenever we ask Kevin and Ted something, they speak for all white people. Yeah. Correct?
Pero hablamos español.
Whoa.
I thought you were talking about me.
Oh, yeah.
You're basically white.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
And then we have, like always, a brown person here as well, so... Woohoo!
Woo!
This is going to be a great podcast. So today, we're interviewing the actors of this little indie movie that some of you might have heard of. Chris kind of mentions it from time to time.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's called Bad Labor by Chris Carmona! And...
Antonian and Jose
and everyone else at work. Yeah, yeah, I know. But your name's the one on the poster. So.
Yeah, that's the one that I cared about the most. Yeah.
Starring Chris Carmona. Yeah.
So we'll have the cast introduce themselves, starting from the order that they were in the call sheets.
Yeah, the order of importance.
So number one.
Hi, I'm Salvador Chacon, and I play Beto Vargas.
He plays Roberto Vargas, the one and only. And
Roberto Vargas.
Number two. I'm Kevin Nelson, and I played Stanley Tesla.
Woo!
Everybody, AK. Everybody's giving me like AK. A bunch of props for Stanley Tesla.
AKA
and third
DJ Pancake.
Oh yeah,
Ted Stavros here as Johnny Angel.
Boom! That's my name.
But so if you haven't seen the movie yet, it'd be best for you to stop now, because we're gonna get into the spoilers for the entire movie. We're just gonna talk about all the behind the scenes process, and this is the first time that all four of us have been together since 2016. Because I've seen you all individually over the years, but like us being in the same room.
Did you not make it to the screening?
No, I was on a plane that exact night.
He was in Greece. You were in Greece, right?
Oh, yeah. He was in Greece.
That night,
the country.
Really won it, yeah.
Nice.
No, the city.
The movie.
There is a city named Greece.
Oh, where?
In California, I believe. That's why I was asking.
Wow. Yeah. Fun fact, everybody. Cool. You learn something new every day.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool fact. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Kevin. Yeah.
Thank you for enlightening us.
Just representing the white community over there.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for showing some light on us brown people, Snowlitch.
Yeah, thank you for educating us like you always are. Whoa! I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So ethnocentrism, 100%.
Go watch Bad Labor. It's on YouTube right now.
It's on my channel.
Oh, we're linking Chris's bio, probably.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It is? All right. As of now, it's on there. Mm-hmm. So let's get into those hard-hitting questions. Me and Chris were pretending to be like a Q&A at like ArcLight Cinemas, like. I just wanted to say that this movie was really inspiring, and you know, I love this movie, and thank you. Anyway, my question is, was it hard making this movie? Like, it's the stupidest question.
So I guess that'd be a good question to open up with. Like, looking back on the experience, like, how would you guys like the complete truth? Like, I don't even care anymore.
It's been
about,
what?
Like,
it's been 2 years or more than 2 years.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's so weird how different we've kind of, or at least how much different I've been since that. Initial principal shoot. I remember I was watching footage and just like the hair I had, I shaved the sides because I was kind of going through something. But then, you know what? I was like, I'm gonna make a movie, so fuck it, I don't care anymore.
This is my look now.
And then just like I remember as I watched like footage, I remember how many times I said sorry and like how many times like you'd like sit me down and be like, how you feeling? How you doing? I'm like, I'm all right. I'm talking to Kevin. I was like, yeah, I'm all right. And then So what was it like for you guys? Because I know how much of like an emotional wreck it had on me, but I'm curious like how it like truly affected you. Because I'm sure there was things you held back because you didn't want me to feel like bad when we were shooting.
Dang. Let's go here.
Me? Yeah, so Sal. Yeah. Let's start with Sal.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, let's start with Sal. What did you fucking hate?
Yeah. Least favorite part.
Yeah, I think the hardest part was working with this a-hole actor all the time. You know, this Kevin dude. My God.
Yeah, dude, I've heard things about this guy.
On behalf of the white community, they apologize.
Yeah. My God. No, I mean, you know, like indie films are hard in general because they have to be shot in a short turnaround. You know, there's not a ton of money and, you know, you just have to like hustle and do everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's I think, you know, you just have to be game, you know, when you sign up for it.
Yeah, and you definitely were, which is what gets me excited, and I credit you all you guys for whenever I talk about this movie, because it's like, how much did you pay these guys? And I did probably give you guys a little something at the end, but I remember thinking like you know, the fact that like that first of all, they didn't ask for pay, and that's why I wanted to reward them with pay. And then seeing like just like the performances that you gave, just like knowing that you guys were just doing this for fun. Because I remember you guys would tell me like, I'd be like, sorry guys, that we like went a little too long here or whatever, we got to how to drop this scene. You guys like, no, like we want to be here, like we wouldn't be here like if we wouldn't be here.
But in all honesty, the worst thing was to come back and reshoot
all the reshoots.
We'll get into that.
That was hard.
I hope so, because those for as like annoying and like how much harder they were, especially because we had to recreate the look from like months ago, and then like we expanded on the scenes too. Like I rewrote them so that way they were more, a little more comprehensible. But that's why I love them so much, because it was important for us to get it right. Because all those scenes that we had to reshoot, which is some would call it a coincidence, some would call it fate, but it's really kind of strange that all the scenes that we lost were all the scenes that I wasn't proud of. Like when we did the outside of the apartment the first time with my friend, the scene at Mino Brito, because we couldn't shoot on raw because like the cards were filled up, so we had to shoot on video. It's like it all like worked out really, really beautifully, and that's why.
What about over here? The hard parts of this shoot. What the hell? And
yeah, you had to do a lot of stunts,
and,
man.
And speaking to the
my stunts, yeah. I mean,
and speaking to the mic, please.
Yeah, speaking to the
yes, video. Hitting a truck. Oh my.
What?
Your poor car. Yeah. Your poor car.
Yeah, so there's that shot where you have to, on your bike, you have to run into the truck. And so we just did various takes.
That's how it dented?
No, that's not how it dented. That's how it got scratched up.
Sorry, but, Mr. Carmona.
Yeah, but Ted had to keep, I said, okay, we're just going to do various. Just throw yourself at the car and like, bah, 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 take after take. And I was just like, I'm not feeling it. And Ted's like, are you sure?
Because I'm feeling it.
Like, I'm feeling it.
And then thankfully, because I wanted to do it in one shot, I wanted to get it, him hitting the truck and then hitting the ground all like in one take. And Jose's like, just do it in two.
I figured it's either I keep going 10 times or I just break my arm on the first try and then we got the shot.
That sounds good. Yeah. That would have worked out. There were a couple injuries on this. But
we'll get into them too.
But that was... I remember how much we put you through. And then the eye that you always talk about. The eye.
My God, I totally forgot about that. Yeah. I remember when we had to film the scene where you beat me up, Kevin. And then I had the eye.
Actually beat him up.
Yeah, like, yeah. I remember that vividly.
And I remember driving home from Paris, the desert, and one eye swollen shut. And I'm like, okay, that's just the makeup. I'll get it off when I get home. And I'm driving with one eye open. I'm tired. It's like 7 in the morning. Kevin, you're making sure everybody's not asleep while driving. You're texting all of us, and we're driving home. I get home, and I just remember the look on my grandmother's face, because my parents were out of town, and she can't sleep unless I'm home. So I get home, she's standing outside the door, and she just goes, "What'd they do to you?" There's blood on my face, and I'm like, "It's a movie, it's a movie." What did they hit you? I'm like, "No." And then I go upstairs, and I try to sleep, and I just feel my eye, and I'm like, "What?" On the makeup's off, and I go and I look in the mirror. My eye looks like I still have the prosthetics on.
Yeah, you got like an allergic reaction.
I remember texting Chris at 3 and not like 8 in the morning. I'm like, we're not putting this on me tomorrow.
Yeah,
what was it, like latex or
latex? I don't know what it was. Yeah,
that's why there's a couple of scenes in the movie where you just see the side of his face.
Oh, that's
so
why.
Like in the shot in the car where he's like, just take me home. Like, we didn't put the eye on him.
I'm like, take me home. Yeah. This eye hurts.
That wasn't scripted.
Take me home, Chris. My eye hurts.
What did they do to my boy?
No, it's grandma.
Yeah, man, this was such a rough production. That. What about you? What about you, Kevin? What was the hardest part for you, Stanley Tesla?
Well, I knew I had to be on my toes because the night before production, Chris picked me up.
Oh, right.
And brought me to his house to sleep over so that we could start bright and early the next day.
We were planning to get the entire shoot, like just have him sleep in my room, my mom's room, my dad's.
Chris brought out my wardrobe and there were a pair of boots and I go, "Do you want me to put those boots on?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "Chris, these are a size 10." And he goes, "Yeah." And I go, "I'm a size 14." And he goes, "I mean, is there any way you can fit in them?" And I went, "Yeah, if I chop 4 inches of my foot off, I'll be wearing my own shoes." But that was just a comical thing. I think, I mean, honestly, like the most taxing day was the scene that we had to reshoot in the car, just because.
When Beto first meets Stanley.
We couldn't have the AC. Like, we had the windows up.
Yeah.
Oh. No air. And it's fucking five guys crammed in Chris's dad's truck. Yeah. So, like, once Chris would say cut, we'd blast the AC and turn down the windows. It was just so fucking hot.
Yeah.
And Sal's wearing, like, a Dickies jacket with a sweater. He's wearing like three layers. He's wearing the Beto costume, which is like three layers, and I have on like a snowboarding jacket, essentially. You know,
aviation jacket.
Yeah, it wasn't physically or mentally. I guess just like spiritually, it was taxing, just because it was just. So hot, and Sal and I are like, "Oh God, we're doing these fucking scenes for like the 13th time."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we're like, we're like, at each time when we would like set up for a new shot, I'm pretty sure Sal would be like, "Chris, that was good, right? It's good, right? Like that's
we're not gonna do it again,
like,
right?
You have it. You have that footage." Down, right? It's stored. It's, like, it's secure.
You got it.
Yeah, because for those who haven't already heard, we lost a significant amount of footage because we were shooting. I didn't know that we were taking this risk, but we were shooting pretty experimentally. We like jailbroke a Canon to shoot on RAW, which is why the movie looks really great. But it was very experimental.
You shouldn't say that on a podcast.
We bleep, so it looks really great.
Nah, fuck it. Who cares? This whole thing was we stole a lot of shit from this movie. I'm proud to say it.
Wow.
But No, because we had bad DIT. We not all the clips uploaded, and so I had to call these guys back. And I think I talked about it on the show, right? Yeah. How I got them to come back.
Oh yeah.
Where I knew it was gonna be like annoying to have to hear, "Hey guys, we have to reshoot 30% of the movie."
God, 30%.
So I said, "All right, so let me make this trailer."
Which isn't that far from half.
So essentially,
we had all the nighttime stuff.
Half the movie.
I did. Well, they did. But we all did. I'll take it.
Fans of the Us podcast are not surprised.
You're not counting the credits, so it is half.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah, the credits are like
half. Yeah, what he means by fans of the Us podcast are not surprised. There have been a couple times where we weren't recording.
Yeah, Chris has... We've gone 30 minutes recording, and then Chris is like, "Can I talk to you outside real quick?" And Chris is like, "I fucking wasn't recording. Oh my God, I'm so sorry." I was like, "Don't let it happen again." Then it happens again the next week. So,
yeah.
Oh, what y'all experience, I feel you.
I would also say
you are recording now.
Yeah, we're rolling all around.
Chris, I don't want to come back yet.
Probably the most annoying day on set, though, and it wasn't due to any of us, was the scene outside the little like taco joint because of the traffic. Remember?
Yeah.
And that was another scene I think we had to reshoot.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I think we both ended up having to do ADR just because the fucking traffic would not let up.
Yeah.
And like, even if we got a 30-second break where the cars weren't loud, there'd be a fucking biker that would just the loudest exhaust.
Ridiculous.
I remember one of my favorite responses to Kevin when he heard one of those people, because they drove off during one of the takes, and like, and then Kevin goes, "Wow. that guy must have a huge cock.
That's in the extended version.
The scene of digging the hole, man. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, thank God somebody else dug the hole, but like, still being inside the hole and like in the middle of, I don't know, 3 a.m. yeah. or something.
Yeah. It's like fucking riverside. It's like, all right, so get in this hole.
I've never been. We're just in a hole in the desert.
That was rough.
That was really exciting.
Let me fucking ask a goddamn question. This is us podcast, not the Chris Carmona podcast.
Okay. I know, Chris. You got to chill.
Yeah. Okay. That brings me to, I guess I would say my biggest question. Like, for all of you at that time, what made you want to say yes to a 19-year-old kid like Chris and seeing two other 19-year-olds as the crew, like, with such a, like, y'all talked about how difficult it was, how taxing and all that stuff. What made you keep going and what made you say yes, essentially?
Kev, you want to go first? Good.
Yeah, I'd love to go first. On behalf of the white community. I mean, listen, I'm a firm supporter of participation, you know, and especially in this industry, that's something that everyone needs, you know, like everyone needs, you don't, it's something you kind of learn along the way. But like everyone needs help, you know, I mean, there's writers out there that have a great script that don't have, actors or a crew to shoot it. There's talented actors out there that don't have projects to do. There's filmmakers that have these stories that they want to tell, but they don't know people. And I myself am someone that has wrangled together people for projects, and I'm just a firm supporter of participation. So, you know, when Chris first came to me and was like, "Hey, man, I wrote this script. I think it'd be great for this role." I read the script, and I was very honest with Chris. I was like, "Hey, man, I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, I don't think this is the best script I've ever read, but I like the story." Because, and I kid you not, like 2 weeks prior, my girlfriend and I were having a conversation about what the story's about, actually. We were at Home Depot just buying paint. And we came out and we got like mobbed by day laborers. And we're like, "No, guys, we're just painting. Like, we got it." You know, like, we can handle this. And we were driving home and I said to her, I said, "You know, I mean, those guys don't know who they're getting in the fucking car with. Like, they're taking a massive risk to do that." And then Chris presents me the script, and I'm like, "Wow, that's kind of, you know, I don't want to say like serendipitous, but coincidental, you know."
I would say serendipitous.
Yeah, I would say that too.
You know, like, that's pretty coincidental. But yeah, I mean, you know, and I mean, as an actor, as an actor without representation, and you know, like, you're not gonna, I don't think you're allowed to say no to offers unless like they're painstakingly horrible. But no, I mean, you know, kid wanted to shoot a movie, offered me a role. I read the script, it was pretty decent. I'm like, "Fuck yeah, I'll help out." I mean, I even offered to like help out on Crew Hands.
Yeah,
you know.
What?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and I also,
and yeah, he supplied.
I lent my gun. It was my camera.
Like, well, it was your lenses.
Oh, it was my lens. Borrowed your lenses. It was my lens that, like, we shot.
We were just gonna shoot on a 50 and a 14mm because we're like, that's all we got. Like, all right, it'll kind of look funky, but you know, fuck it. But yeah, you lent us.
It's crazy. I, you know, didn't know that.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, like, participation, man.
Yeah.
All in.
We're looking at Ted.
Okay.
You're going.
Well, Chris, it's obvious. I've known you for a long time now. I've worked with you before on Fingered.
Yeah.
And I
what was that title?
A finger.
Fingered.
Y'all have to, we're gonna watch it after.
Oh god.
Yeah, let's roll the clip. No. And I just feel like I've grown up with you since that, because we were so young and we were shooting it, rocking it.
Yeah.
Not sleeping.
Yeah.
Started at 10 p.m., didn't finish till 3 p.m., and nothing's changed. We're still doing the same thing, but,
still here.
You know, I saw your passion, and that's what, and we had to do it.
Oh, man, thank you.
Oh, wow.
I'm saying, you see, you just got to work with good people.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I met with Chris a couple times, and I think, like, Kevin, you know, read the script, and I was like, "Well, Chris, I think maybe this, you know..." Just trying to understand more why I would play the character.
Right, yeah.
Or how the character would fit me a little more. You know, that was my main thing.
Yeah.
But Yeah, it was kind of like Chris's passion at the same time. It's like, well, you know, he's very committed and determined to do the movie. You know, I saw the script and I did also try to like make some of it so that I could fit more into the part.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, you did.
And I told Chris.
No, I said it because you were responsible for a lot of.
I know what you meant by that. It was just funny.
Yeah, no, but you know. And just Chris very determined and committed to do the film. It's like, well, we're doing it, we're finishing it, we're putting it together. And that's what I was like, well, you know.
Doing it and redoing it.
It takes commitment. And I feel that in this city, that's that if you want to make it, you know, you have to have commitment and you have to love what you do. And you also have to, you know, persevere with these things or else, you know, you just won't.
Yeah, I remember in one of the first versions of the draft, instead of $10,000 like cash, it was a check. And he's the one that gave me that first time. He's like, a check, man? He's like, it would be more attractive if it was money. I'm like, oh, okay, so that he brought that idea.
A big novelty check.
Yeah,
pulled it out of the truck. He's
like, that would have been hilarious.
This is for you, Beto.
There were a couple of things that like they influenced. And like even Kevin too. Like there was like, I remember when we wrote the first draft, I came to them for just like essentially just like notes or thoughts, and I remember Kevin had like, well, why isn't Stanley a little bit more threatening to him? And so that's why there's the whole like, well, if you make me go back, I'm gonna have to leave you here or whatever. That's where that came from. And so it was cool because yes, I did write and everything, but so many people contributed. We don't talk about this a lot, but Brandon really like helped me guide the story to make it what it was and to give it that twist. And then like I just ended up asking everybody questions what they thought, and then I think Ted just loved it right away. He's like, yeah, I'm ready to do this whenever. But Kevin and Sal, because I guess they're gonna be doing a lot more of the like.
Did anyone ever? This is a question to you, Chris. I guess did anyone ever suggest something that you're like, I don't think so.
I remember Roberto. Sal. He said. Would Roberto keep the truck though? He's like, I feel like I would get rid of that thing right away. I'm like, well, we don't have the budget to have a whole scene where he gets rid of it. So you just hang on to it.
Like, yeah, yeah. But for me, it was just more of like logical things. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, I don't think he would drive this truck to his house. Yeah. He'd probably leave it there and walk back or something.
Right. Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, that sort of thing.
So there was a lot of that.
Also, quick if you were to compress all the time spent on the movie regarding shooting. You did this in like a week.
Yeah. Yeah, we shot in a week. Like
it was like you shot like
straight.
Days?
Straight.
I mean, originally we did, I think we did 4 days.
We did 4 days straight or 4 or 5 days straight?
I forgot that you weren't on for that long. Like you were on for like a couple, and then like it was just you, me, and the rest of it. Like you left early. Because we knocked out all your stuff first.
Dang. Yeah. And like, must I mean, nice. that alone is impressive. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I once worked on like a student feature film for like 5 weeks, and it was just a horribly comical experience. But like, nothing ever happened. Nothing ever came
from it.
From it, you know, like the guy kind of like self-sabotaged like the movie, and you know, just like Chris, Tony, and Jose just like putting their blood and sweat.
Did y'all know that Chris almost sabotaged the movie after the first day, right? You told me that you were like, this is...
Oh, I wouldn't call it sabotage, but after the third day, which the third day that I talk about in my whole, in my intro to Bad Labor video, that day was the torture scene. And that was because we had to drop, because we were trying to knock out everything in the shed where he's torturing him, and then we were going to do all the whole stuff, but we were in the shed for so long that like
the
sun came up and we were just like, we're gonna have to move this for another day.
And we did, right?
And we did, yeah. We, of course, it's better for that because we didn't have to rush it. But we had
yeah,
remember,
we did.
Yeah. The second day, I remember the second day, which is the chase scene. We had to drop the scene because we were gonna do a company move here to shoot the whole kidnapping sequence.
Right.
But we had to drop that. So and then you're like, it's just one scene that we dropped. It's no big deal. And like as the shoot went on, we had to drop like little. Like minor.
Okay, drop that one. Nah. Drop this one. Drop that one.
Yeah.
But that's what happens on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was it was such an all over the place experience. But
hey, I got a question.
Yeah.
I got a question for you, pal.
Angel's talking to Kevin.
No, Kevin's talking to Angel.
Yeah, that's actually what's going on.
Not enough edibles in this guy.
Halloween sucks.
Angel, as I would imagine that you were probably close to Chris through the production process. You know, like I know you weren't there on set, but I'm sure you were communicating with him and whatnot.
No, we weren't friends by that point.
Yeah, we only became friends when Bad Labor already had like a first cut, right?
Yeah, so 2017 we became friends.
Okay, so my question to you then, as an audience member, in regards to Chris's filmmaking, what are some of the things that you most enjoyed about the movie?
I remember first watching it and telling Chris, like, straight up, I was like, you know what? I think you should turn this into a short film.
This is when we screened it at Me Too.
Yeah, and yeah. And he's like,
you know, you know, why Chris, like, that voice, but okay.
You know, I don't think so. That's how I hear Chris, like, all the time. But
a real nasally high voice.
You know, like scratching his beard, you know. But like I remember watching it at Me Too, and I was just so impressed by how much he kind of got away with, I guess. Like the chase scene, and then the thing I point to all the time is the final, like, just car chase, like, action scene. I was like, how the fuck did you do that? Like, a guy hanging off...
I can't answer that question.
I was like, a guy hanging off a fucking truck while going straight towards a fucking 18-wheeler in the middle of the fucking night, and then you turn the lights off, and I was like, Chris, what the fuck? Like, you could have killed these people. I was like, nah, it was fine. Like that was your response. It was fine. My dad was driving.
Hearing your response to that scene is like exactly what. Like I remember sitting right here in this couch and telling Kevin, like, because he's like, so about this scene where I'm hanging off the top of the truck. How do you plan on doing that? I said, dude, that's the scene.
Oh, that scene's dope. It's like, yeah. I have no doubt that it's dope, Chris. How are we gonna
accomplish it? Is what I'm asking you. But that scene, it's good to hear you say that, because that scene was definitely designed for that reason. I remember, like I told you, when we shot this whole movie, we just had to get everything with your faces on it. So everything inserts with your hands.
I didn't know till recently that everything with the hands and stuff, it's usually either Chris or Tony.
The only thing that includes them is everything that you see with their face in it. Everything else with a hand reaching, a close-up of a hand or, you know, that's all us.
Yeah, a lot of quick inserts.
Yeah, a lot of those.
That's awesome.
But,
we spent so much time on that one road.
Yeah, so that's a road in Commerce. I believe it's Randolph. But
Randolph?
Yeah, but it's a long street. It's a very long street.
That's where we shot the whole
the conversation.
Beto meeting. That's essentially our meet cute scene.
Our meet cute.
So cute.
And it's which cute. We did twice. And then we spent two nights shooting, I think, nights out. Well, all the night stuff.
Yeah, all the night stuff driving. Yeah.
Is there anything that any three of you can remember shooting that didn't make it into the movie that you're like, oh man, Chris, what the fuck?
No. I would hope not.
No, because, you know, on typical movies, you know, like the slug line in the script, that's like scene one, scene two, scene three.
Oh, really?
We structured it, though. We didn't structure it that way. We just structured, like, a break-in scene, Beto morning phone call scene.
Oh, so there's no, like, whole things you...
So technically in this movie, there's 15 scenes. Like, you know what I'm saying? So that's why it was easy to keep track of all of it like that. But
cool. Yeah. Well, so I heard... Sorry to like kind of... I'm hijacking this thing,
no,
Chris.
No, dude, do it, yeah.
So I heard why they decided to help you out. But Chris, why did you cast these three people in your movie?
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I was thinking of Roberto, I knew I just... the whole thing that I talk about is how I knew I couldn't get stars to be in this, but I wanted people who were like not just... as performers, stars in their own right. But
you didn't ask Kevin
like
Spacey
stars.
To be in this movie?
No, and I'm really glad I didn't, in hindsight.
trade one Kevin for another?
We'll see who's the least scandalous.
Ooh, I know, in a couple years, who knows?
But yeah, no, so I remember I was looking for, with Sal, I definitely knew I wanted like a Demian Bashir, you know, Del Toro type, and so so I remember I put a casting like listing on this.
What
do I sound like, every white casting agent?
I want like a, you know, a very I just want him to be like ethnic, you know, very ethnic, very Del Toro.
And I remember putting out like a listing for it on this Facebook film group, but it was just a bunch of just like Indian dudes submitting themselves, like they're like, I'm ethnically ambiguous. I'm like, no, Rajesh, you're not ethnically ambiguous. Like, I know you're not Mexican. I need a Mexican. And so they were just sending me a bunch of just... And the Mexican actors... the Mexican actors that would apply were either, like, too fat or just, like, too old. And then...
And we all know how Chris feels about
Yeah, we know I don't fuck with fat people.
Oh, no. I forget. How is it that you found me?
Your friend Paul McCone.
Oh,
he put your website. Paul. He's son of a bitch. I'm never going to talk to him again. No, but he put your website. And I saw your picture. And I always say there's a picture of Sal... Where he's just like, he's wearing this cool sweater or jacket, and he's got like this look, and he's furrowing his brow like this. And I'm like, that's Roberto. That concerned demeanor. I'm like, I love that. I'm like, that's Roberto.
What a movie moment. Just like, you're looking at this picture in your house, like, that's the one.
I kept saying, I'm like, he's got his face. And so I remember I hit him up. You were in San Fran. I think you had lost your phone or something. And I messaged you on Instagram. I commented. I was like, hey, I got this movie that I'd love you to read for. So that's how we met. And then we hung out. He invited me to his apartment.
Via social media.
Yeah. Yeah. So we found him on Facebook. So there's no shame in, like, you know, looking for actors that way. Or
yeah.
That for a little while, I was embarrassed.
Someone shaming you?
No, but I was embarrassed for a little while. That's like the greatest lead I've ever worked
he
with.
He calls himself a filmmaker. He went on social media.
He went on Facebook.
Right. Lord.
Does anyone want to be in my movie?
But see, there's nothing wrong with that.
He didn't
rent out
a casting room like most people.
Yeah,
he didn't spend the money to get a room in Hollywood. to see people. But that's how we met. And I really love that story the more I tell it, just because it was just so like what are the odds that this guy just sees us listening? It's like, oh, I have a friend who's a fucking great actor, and I remember he just
submitted and is brown
it. And is brown, yeah, nice. And he's like, and now is killing it and crushing it right now.
Dude,
so
hell yeah.
So see, it feels good to know that I have that, like, I always say I have like that casting sensibility where like I could just tell, like,
right, take it back. Easy, boy.
No, no, I do. I
oh,
saw.
Trust
I,
me.
I
know.
None of them auditioned. I just.
Oh, it's so awesome that I just like, you know, I just know. I just know
I'm
when
so
someone's amazing.
Talented. Oh my
just,
god.
I have this ability. It's this. I just have this ability.
I'm just such an artist.
This.
Have such an eye. Such an eye.
I wrote a movie with three characters, and I just happen to know three people.
Yeah, I'm the shit.
Oh yeah.
So Kevin, I always say was the funniest guy in my improv class, and when I would see him, I'd always like to sit next to him, you know, so that way I can be like around his aura of funny, because there were a lot of unfunny people in that class.
To absorb the funny.
Yeah, exactly. To get some, and we even had scenes together that I would totally ruin, but Kevin just like carried, and he's like, he still like allowed me to like work with him on some scenes.
I can imagine Kevin's like, this fucking kid.
Chris was very difficult in improv class. But I don't think it's anything personal. I think it's, and I've noticed it with other classes as well, there's just a big age gap between... Chris at that time and a lot of the other students, and like, you know, your sense of humor grows.
Yeah,
so like, you know, a bunch of kids that were like, I don't know how old we were, like 25, 26 at that time, and Chris was what, 17, 18?
No, I was like 19. I just turned 19.
You had just turned 19. So like, you know, it's not that he was a bad kid. It was just like, generation wise, I think there was just like a comedic gap, you know?
Chris was like, suck my balls.
No, for real. For real. For real. Chris would do a lot of no-nos in improv.
Oh, my God.
I don't remember it.
I remember. I remember some shit. But
I remember making Bill Cosby jokes. That's where that Bill Cosby impersonation thing comes from in the movie.
No.
Yeah, but anyway, he like, you know, but like, I mean, yeah, whatever. I mean, it happens. But like, after, I mean, before and after class, whatever, like, he was just like a very nice, genuine kid. And I'm like, you know, like, he's not a bad kid. He's just, his sense of humor is different. And I'm sure if I were to.
He's not a bad kid. He's just an idiot.
He's just not
right.
Funny.
Right. But like, if I were to see myself at 18 now, I'd probably have the exact same attitude.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So like, yeah, it's nothing personal.
Damn, I kind of want to dive into what I did, but anyway, we'll go on with the question. No, but so I knew he could be funny, and I really, really admired him, and I wanted to like hang out with him and be his friend so bad. So I wrote a movie, and that's what this all is. That's what this all is.
There's
just a big scheme,
guys. This is all just a ploy,
just to
be
Kevin's
friend.
It's like, anyway, it's like about a day laborer or whatever. But like, there's this part that you are in, and only you. It can only be you.
So that's how we got him. And then I did write it with him in mind. So like a lot of the lines, like I had like the little quips and stuff, I'd like definitely like imagine like how would Kevin say this, and from like How long were we in that class? For like 8 weeks? 9 weeks?
Yeah, I think it's a 8 week class.
Yeah, so cool. I just kind of wrote it with him in mind. And then Ted, I also wrote it with Ted in mind because we had worked with each other on Finger. And I always told him, I said, I'm going to put you in my first movie.
Wow.
And yeah. We found
you're like, thanks. Yeah. You're yeah. Like, sorry, I might be busy when you write it.
No, he was the one that read it the quickest. He read it.
Dang, throwing shade.
Well, no, he just did.
No, I'm really telling excited. You, that was probably the quickest I've read a script. Like,
that's
I literally,
how simple it is.
You sent it to me, and I remember I was still in high school and just reading it as I was driving to school. And then I get
home. As you were driving.
As wow, I was driving. Like, just so like, literally having it.
Yeah. The S it's podcast not texting. Is not condoned reading and driving.
Yay.
Yeah. And
I got to class and I was like, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah, he responded within like 2 hours. But that's another thing too. They took a while to read the scripts, or at least to give me an answer. And so I was so nervous. It felt like a forever of me, but it was probably like 5 days from like when I had asked. But I was just so nervous because like weeks would go by, and like meanwhile I was getting all the costumes ready and preparing all like the locations. And like, I still haven't heard from
drawing Sal's picture over and over in your notebook.
Yeah, actually, I made the birthday card off of one of Sal's headshots, the one where he's making that frowny face. But we hadn't even locked him down yet. I was just like, I really hope we get this guy or that he's interested because I'm already drawing this thing because
I'm gonna fucking cry. You're like, but Sal, I already drew you. Like you showed the birthday card. You showed the card. Look what I did for you. Yeah. Say yes, please. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, so sweet.
It was really cool how we all came together, and that's why being here now it feels really rewarding because, like, I don't know, I feel like I really have the perfect ensemble cast here. I mean, it's just everything's being represented. You know,
well,
every ethnicity
except Tony and Jose.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Shout out Tony Jose.
Yeah, but
you know Tony would be talking nonstop.
Tony the DP.
Oh. He'd be eccentrically talking.
Yeah, he would be talking over us this entire time.
Be demanding all the microphones.
Gather all the microphones in the middle. Let me speak into all of them.
If Tony would be like, that's not true, Chris.
That was Sal. That was Salvador Chacon pretending to be Tony or me. Yeah.
Wait, hold on. I want to do Tony now. if Chris were to, or if Angel were to go, Tony, how what was your overall mentality? How was your overall mental perspective while filming the movie? Tony would go.
It was good.
Dude, you're right. That's exactly what he was
like
say.
The crazy son of a bitch.
Like,
he is.
It was good, and I'm like, that's it.
All jokes aside,
same with Jose. Be like, yeah. Just move closer to the mic, yeah.
Damn, Jose the Kanye.
Just like, can we pause real quick? Can we pause? Move closer to the mic, please.
Yeah. If Tony and Jose, a lot of hold for planes. There was a lot of that.
All jokes aside, if Tony and Jose were here, though, what would you say? Their favorite things or their least favorite things about the experience were?
Well, Tony, I could speak for Tony right away. He hated because
he hated
the movie.
Yeah, no, they were really. I could tell they were. I mean, everybody was annoyed with me on that set. And that was one hard thing to deal with. But as like you know, like I have to make that sacrifice of being like the annoying one to get this thing done. Because
when you're the captain of the boat, man, that comes with the title.
It does. Yeah. So that's why that's the one hard lesson I had to learn, that like it isn't always like they can't always be happy with you. Like even if it's like a set with everybody's has their own jobs, it's like it's
really?
There's going to be tension.
I found regardless. That everyone likes me all the time. So maybe that's just
so me. Anyway. I think for Tony, I can definitely say that his least favorite part was the editing, but that's mostly because we built the computer in his room. So whether he liked it or not, I was in there every day for all of 2017, just cutting the movie. The same line, I'm DJ Pancake, man. I'm DJ Pancake, man. You know, like fucking going over and over. And so
motherfucking
we'd seen this whole thing like at least 200 times, like no jokes, like all the way through.
God.
Can you imagine?
But
Lord.
Yeah. So I think for, cause Jose was only involved during principal shoot. Like he was doing his own thing and he was going to school when we were cutting. So like, it really just became me and Tony. Like we went to go get the B-roll ourselves. We're the one that did the ADR and stuff. And
shout out to Tony because, I mean, my favorite thing about that film, honestly, is like mostly the shots.
Yeah.
Some of those shots are just fucking
Man,
stellar.
That yeah. shot with the bag and like it's going lower and lower, like the money bag, and you see fucking Roberto. I was like, Chris, how'd you do that?
That scene when we're in the truck in the desert, like aesthetically, that is fucking awesome. That was like seeing that for the first time was like, I mean, because we were there. Awesome. We were there at sunset, right? Or it was like right before sunset.
Yeah.
We literally had like an hour to do that scene.
Yeah.
And just seeing that on film, dude, just fucking beautiful.
Dude, like, well, that's actually interesting because I want to hear like the pure initial reaction of seeing a first cut of Bad Labor. Like, what was the first thing that you thought like after finishing it?
I'm very critical of myself. I don't normally watch anything.
And now we're gonna go into the brains of Angel and Chris. Angel, can you hear me? This is they're talking so fucking much. I'm so big right now from scared.
I can tell. Should we take a break? I'm down. Goodbye, y'all. See you soon.
Leaving Chris and Angel's brain.
I'm very critical of myself. I don't normally watch anything. So for me, it was just I watched pieces of it, but I didn't really watch a lot of it. You know, I like the screening. I also was late, so I was there almost just towards the last 20 minutes of it, and it was painful to watch just because I don't like seen myself, but I thought it worked. You know, I think Chris had a specific style for the film that I think also because the way it was shot and everything fit it. You know, so I thought it flowed. You always want things different as an actor. It's like, I should have done this or I should have not done that.
You're overly
like,
critical.
Oh fuck! I wish they would have chosen another take.
Yeah,
but you know, that's yeah.
It comes with the territory.
Yeah, I remember I had shown early cuts. And so, like, I remember as we were editing, I think the only person I, like, would send, like, even when we just had temp music on it, like, stuff to was Kevin, just because, like, I was really excited for him to see his, like, his moments. But I remember Sal specifically, like, I left him, like, last because I'm like, all right, he wasn't very impressed by my hard drive iPhone short. Because I was like, it's cool, right? You're like, yeah. Good.
So shot on an iPhone, right? Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah, I'm like, isn't on an iPhone. But I saved him for last because like, I want him to see this movie like when it's fucking done. Like, I don't want him to like see like the in the works version or whatever, you know, just so like he could be like, oh, yeah. Because I remember me and Tony, we kept joking like, it's funny because we had always known the potential of this movie from the beginning. We didn't know if it was going to pan out, but we had like believed in it just as much as like as if we had like had it right here in front of us. But we would joke like, I bet like they think that this is just kind of be like some like shitty little thing that they did one summer and be like, there might be something in there for my reel, not like a full fledged movie.
Maybe like
that.
20 seconds that I can use probably.
Yeah, like 10.
Yeah, like, let's cut it down to 10.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. I think those scenes at the Home Depot for me was, I think the only thing that I told Chris, I should have just left it in color, you know, but then he had his reasons to do it in black and white, but. Yeah. And I think it looks good.
Yeah, which I could actually explain why. Yeah.
Nah, I'm good.
Okay.
No, yeah, what were those reasons? I was actually curious.
For the black and white stuff. So we shot that on the camera that we shot everything at night in. And I was operating that day because it was just me and Tony. So Tony was running sound and I was shooting. But I couldn't tell from the monitor, but everything was really blown out. And so, I mean, for one, the color was kind of off because it wasn't the same Canon that we had been shooting the rest of the movie with in the daytime. But everything was blown out, so like things were too white and bright, and so we were like, fuck, like we try to like bring it down, but then you'd see like the circle hot spots and it would just like really cheap and amateur. So then we thought, like, I remember I said, let me turn this in black and white. So I did, and I'm like, it almost looks like dramatic lighting, like the heavy whites and stuff. So I'm like, this could actually work
when everything fails. Black and white, like, will save you.
I did that.
So the artistic reason we gave is like, it's because, you know, during the montage where the day laborer is playing his guitar, you see every clip gets gradually darker and darker. And it's like, it's supposed to represent the despair that these laborers feel while they're,
you know, his,
waiting
his
for
spirit
job.
Is being trained.
Despair and then the life of a laborer.
So,
Yeah. So the
life is being drained.
The cherry on top of that is that, like, Wyatt comes back into colors because Stanley shows up. So Stanley brings the color back into Roberto's light. But the real reason is just we fucked up.
Yeah. like most things, we fucked up.
Yeah.
What about you, Ted? What was your first reaction to seeing a cut of
Teddy Stavros?
Right when he sent it to me, I got on my computer.
I got in my car, drove to school,
and I started watching it while I was driving.
It was Sunday, but I made my way to school anyway to watch it in my car. I think you saw, I showed you some of the first stuff when we were just doing ADR. So I even showed you like the car chase, the truck versus the pickup.
Yeah, you sent me all that, and I remember, I mean, like you said too, I was like, I watched it by myself first. I was in my room.
You're like, I know this is embarrassing.
I was, yeah, no, I watched it and I was like, you know what? Okay. But I loved the film and I was like, okay, I want to show everyone. And yeah. I remember telling Chris, I'm like, Chris, I'm going to show everyone. Yeah. And I remember you sent me just the link.
The private link. Yeah,
the private screener. Link. And I go, Chris, I'm going to release it tomorrow to everyone.
Yeah.
I just want to get a last, it's cool, Teddy, just before I release it. And he goes, absolutely not. Do not put that up.
It's like, please, there's like something big happening. Don't do it. It's like, yeah, too late. I was hoping you'd say yes because I sent the email already.
I don't think I've asked. Like, have you, Sal, have you had a chance to watch the whole thing yet?
Yeah, I've watched.
So what do you guys think?
In pieces.
I'm genuinely curious. Like, I know we've talked about, just like we're talking about the experience, but like as the movie itself, like.
Well, I want to hear also Kevin's initial reaction to the first screening of
Batman. Oh my God, I thought he talked to me. Go ahead.
No.
Well, like Sal, I'm usually reluctant to watch myself.
Yeah.
Well, I know Chris and I had different opinions sometimes about like takes, because like Stanley is a very like eccentric character, you know, and I would tell my friends, I'm like, yeah, I go, you know, like most scenes we would do like three takes, like I would do it my way, and then Chris would be like, can you do it more like this? And I'd meet him halfway. And then the last take, Chris would be like, all right, just for me, can you do it my way? Which is like, he's the director. That's fine. You know what I mean? Like,
just for me, can you do it my way?
Yeah.
Can you do it the way God intended?
Yeah. Which is like, you know, and like when you're an actor on set, like that's true. I mean, like, you know, you can bring what you want to bring to the table, but overall, like if, you know, the director says just do it my fucking way, you have to comply with that. So when I was watching the movie, there's some scenes that like I thought there were better takes of. But yeah, I mean, like the movie overall, I think is great. You know, like I was really reluctant. But when I brought my friends to the screening, like my girlfriend fucking loved the movie.
And I have a funny story about that. She told me that you told her that you had like a bit little part that it wasn't very important.
No, she just doesn't listen to me when I talk.
That's okay. And then Kevin gets like, yeah, that's a really big problem we have. You know, it's we're trying to work on it. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God.
No, it still happens to this day. I'm just not that interesting. But what was great too for the movie is that Sal and I did not meet until our first day shooting together.
Yeah,
which I thought like was great for the chemistry of the characters, you know, because like we met that first day at Home Depot.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, and like, you know, broke the ice a bit, and then like we started doing the movie, and thankfully Sal's such a good actor that like, you know, and like he's like, he played Beto the way Beto should have been performed, you know? And, like, when we would do certain scenes where, like, Chris would be like, all right, like, jack it up to 11, you know? And, like, I'm just wild. And Beto would just be, like, awkwardly responding. Like, that's kind of perfect for the chemistry of the scene, you know?
Chill, bro.
Yeah. But when I saw the movie for the first time, thankfully, it was good. I don't know.
You said what you needed to say. It was good.
I liked it.
Yeah, me too. I like that.
Yeah, show. I think it's cool.
What did you think, Chris?
No, but it was I.
You were like 10 out of 10 fucking best movie ever made. I remember there was a period. I'm sorry, Chris. I'm gonna call you out.
Okay.
There was a period where Chris was like, "This is the fucking best thing that come out of Hollywood in the last 15 years."
Well, I still believe that, and here's why: because that confidence was important in finishing it. I had to like convince myself that I was really working toward. I mean, and I still believe it. It's not like I stopped. I'm like, okay, now let's be realistic. This thing sucks, but it's like I needed that confidence. I needed that like bravado to like help me believe that like I was doing something like that. I was contributing basically to film history in a way. So that way, it's like okay, like this
you
is
you need
not,
to hype yourself up.
I needed to finish this because I wanted to see this movie happen and
do it.
Even after like 200 times of seeing it, like I was telling you yesterday, the reason I knew it was a good movie is because even though I was already like mentally exhausted from watching it, Sal would do something like just perfect, like a subtle like acting move, and I'd just be like, oh, perfect. And then Kevin would say something that just made me go, okay. And like it just got me every time. And it was like, it has nothing to do with me why this movie's gonna be fucking incredible. Like it's them, like they carry it. Even though I've seen them do this exact same joke or this moment 1,000 times, like
that's awesome.
It still affects me. Like that scene, I tell you, my favorite scene between you two is the "Why'd you pick me" scene, just because that was so. It was just such a human
Why'd
moment
you
between
me?
You two.
Why you pick me?
And I remember I was telling him.
Are we watching the movie right now?
No, that's at the
Mino Burrito.
Yeah, when you guys were having the talk, when you said, "Okay, let's get
Hell
out of
yeah.
here."
Yeah, Why you pick me, man?
Oh yeah.
And what do you say?
The Oscar performance.
Lord,
You have a trusting face.
You have an honest face.
You have an honest face.
And I love that. And I don't know if you remember how that scene originally ended. It didn't end on that line.
Didn't it?
No. I remember... Do you remember how it ended, that scene? Originally? I talked about it on the show before, but...
No.
Honestly. So you say, after you say, "You have it on his face," you know, we cut to that incredible close-up of him. And then it would cut back to you, and then you go...
face.
And you
wow.
go, and you're kind of cute, too.
Oh, yeah,
and you walk
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
And I remember I showed that to a bunch of people, and then they were like they loved that scene, but they're like, "Get rid of that last part." I'm like, "Really?" And there's like a bunch of people that I trusted were just like, "Get rid of that," because like that ruins the little moment that they have together. And it's my favorite scene of the movie.
There is one thing that did not make the final cut that I was really hoping for.
Yeah, me too.
We were filming here at my apartment, and we were driving around, and my line was "sick," right? And like I exclaim it like "sick," right? But we had done it so many fucking times that at one point I accidentally said "sick tight," and I didn't even realize I said it. And we called cut, and everyone burst out to laughter. And I was like, "What happened?" And I was like, "Oh, that should be in the fucking final cut," and it's not.
It's not. It's not because that was a part of the stuff that we lost. And so I think we had the audio for it, but we didn't have the. And I was like, I know it would have been a.
You could have done like a really bad dub, like sick tight.
Yeah, no, but there were a lot of cool. And we're actually, I don't think we got to mention this, but we're actually in the apartment complex where we shot that whole kidnapping sequence. That's all.
Wow.
We're standing right here, and
yeah,
and it's just so cool that like we got to really just borrow everybody's stuff on this thing, and I think that's an essential key, especially to
you borrowed everyone's soul for. That week of shooting.
It was a really long week too, but...
Speaking of souls, no, I'm just kidding. I do want to ask though, as actors, all three of you, is there anything you learned as an actor specifically while making Bad Labor that you've like taken on in the future? Or maybe not as an actor, but maybe just as a creative in general. Like something that you learned through the process. And you can think about this too, Chris.
Yeah.
What did you learn as a director?
Well, this is the one that I really, and I iterated this in the Bad Labor intro video, but like I just learned, like, next time just have fun with it. Like I mean there's funny stories and good memories to come out of this whole experience, but I just remember being just completely miserable, and I was concerned. I'm like, is this what all my directing career is going to be like, where like I hate the most of it and I only enjoy it when it's like
done,
when it's being made, you know, like in the editing room. Mm-hmm. And so when I did Instant Crush, I was like, okay, I'm learning from Bad Labor just to have fun with it. And like, because the one thing I do give myself a little bit of credit for is that we were able to like roll with the punches on Bad Labor. Like we didn't like get hung up if we couldn't like get a shot a one way, or if we had to like push something. Like I got sad, but it didn't like stop me from working. But I just made sure that this time around that
you learn to have fun
and don't take it too seriously, because we were just we're just making
you're
a
making
movie.
A movie.
The way what Sal said, I remember he told me one time, he's like, we're making a movie here, we're not saving lives, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good thing to apply for almost everything, you know. You're like, you just gotta take it easy, you know. It's a movie at the end of the day, you know.
It's just a movie, guys.
Yeah. So we should take a little break.
One answered my question.
What was your question?
The fuck? I asked, what did people learn about being an actor through the experience?
Well, I think, like, for me, it's always good to learn how to work with new people, how to understand someone else's process, you know. I think that's a thing that you take from all this project, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, because when you jump into a new project, you're meeting new people and completely changing your workspace every time you step into something new. So you have the opportunity to meet new people and be creative. So,
and look at all these cool new people we met.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what they both said. And I also, like, I think it's important to, as an actor, like, every now and then, kind of just do, like, a very guerrilla style indie. Because, you know, like, you kind of have to, like, lie, cheat, and steal, and sacrifice sometimes to make projects, and that's really where the heart of it is, you know? Because, like, once you reach that upper tier of projects, like, it's all money-based, and everyone becomes assholes. So it's, you know, when you're doing these indie things and...
I'm looking at you, Sal.
You gotta... when you're making a project and you gotta force a square through a circle, you know, it's educational for everyone, you know? Like, I mean, I knew, like, Sal and I both knew, like, this was Chris's first feature film, so, like, we knew... We were kind of, like, on deck, just both having production experience. Like, we were on deck for just, like, we should just, like, keep an eye out for how they do stuff. You know, like, man, what was that? I think it was, like, the first day we were shooting the car, our meet-cute scene. They had this horribly rigged, like, plank of wood.
No way.
Yeah, that they were gonna strap the camera onto that while we drove the car, and we were both just like, "No, guys, don't do that. Don't do that. We're gonna lose that camera.
It won't be a film,
you know." And like, we didn't want to be at no point were we telling them what they should do, but like, we were just kind of like, you know, keeping an eye out on stuff, and you know. Like, if they were troubleshooting a problem, we would offer up an idea or a suggestion just from personal experience. So I think, like, yeah, for, like, you know, for Sal and I mean, the experience is probably similar, you know, regarding the project. And then I think for Chris, Tony, and Jose, like, it was, like, you know, it's like, I guess it's like when you train for a marathon, you know, and then you actually run your first marathon.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah. It's like that. So, like, you know, they did their homework. They came prepared, and you know, they had to troubleshoot some things. But overall, every project's a learning experience.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
That's awesome.
I remember, like, the first shot of any, like, imported footage from Bad Labor. It's literally we're over Kevin's shoulder looking at the laborers. That's the first shot we ever got. Mm-hmm. And the first thing Kevin says, I keep watching this because it's hilarious. We weren't rolling sound that day, or at least we weren't rolling sound that early because Oscar was running late. And so we were just going to do it MOS.
Oscar.
Oscar.
I remember Oscar.
Who the hell's Oscar?
He was the guy who filled in for Jose when he was in school.
White, like, light-skinned
Jose. Light-skinned guy. No. Skin.
I'm sorry, Oscar. I don't remember you.
Sorry, bro.
I'll show you a picture. You'll see.
Well,
Skeletos was more
anyway,
memorable.
the first thing Kevin says, he looks at Tony and he's like, what about sound? And then Tony goes, that's literally, he looks concerned. He's like, what about sound? And then you hear Tony go, we're doing it later. And you go, okay. So, like, what a great start to this whole thing. He's like, we're doing it later. And you're like,
no sound today.
And Kevin, tomorrow. Like, through his glasses, you can still see his expression, like, okay.
Well, all right.
All right. Action. Let's do it.
So, my question would be, and this is for you too, Chris. Like, I guess I'll refer to all of us as creatives. it's super difficult, like the landscape that we're navigating and stuff, and it's very competitive, especially acting. We just came back from like talking about all these auditions that we don't get calls back from and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I want to know if there was ever a time in your career where you felt like, I don't think this is going to work out, and I think I'm done with acting specifically, or just like being in this industry. Like, I think I'm done. Like, have you ever felt like giving up? Has it ever been that dire of a situation?
Kevin?
No, I've been climbing my way upwards for 8 years now, and you know, like I feel like I'm still not even scratching the surface of it. But no, I mean, like, even if I were, I mean, dude, I've been in a handful of situations where I've been shit out of luck with no money, with nothing to do and nowhere to go. But no, I would never stop. It's like, yeah, no, it's not an option.
Nice.
It's not an option.
Same. I don't see it like that at all. Like, this is my passion. If this is what you want, you don't stop and you will get it. Like, that's just how it works.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how hard it is. If you want to give up and go be something else, that's easy. Do that. But you know before you get into this that this is hard. So if you want it, you got to push and just never give up. And that's how you get it.
I think, like, giving up is not an option. I think there's definitely ups and downs in the sense of emotional roller coaster, because, you know, it's like Kevin said, sometimes you're like in bad shape and you're like, fuck, what am I doing? And but then again, if you're gonna come to LA to be an actor, you have to love it, and you have to just know that it's not gonna be like, you walk in, you go into an audition, and you get a part, and you get rich, and you get famous.
Yeah, it's not gonna be a Star Is Born.
No, no, exactly. But that does happen. Does happen, really, truly. Like, I know, like, this girl that is on the show Vida now, she's only been here in LA for like a year and a half, I think, and she went in, and now she's like huge, and CAA is repping her, and like this whole thing. So it might be 2 years or something. But it can happen, you know, when talent meets opportunity and you're in the right place in the right time, boom, that happens.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's a process, you know. Like, I think, like, both Kevin and I mean, I think Ted, you're from here, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But like, I've been in LA almost 9 years as well, so it's a constant, like, going and going and going, and once again, you can't take it personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the best lesson I think I got a little late. Because, like, my first 2 years, like, when I wasn't getting auditions, I was just like, what's wrong with me? Like, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
And then I realized it had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. It's never about us.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, yeah, of course, you got to have your game on. Yeah. There's so many talented people out here.
But there's so many countless factors that go into casting.
Right.
You know? Like,
we're just talking about social media following is a factor now, sadly, in being cast.
I had this audition, I think it was last summer. It was for the Playboy channel.
Ooh.
And it was for like a traveling host. Like, they wanted to do like someone like a Anthony Bourdain Parts Unknown thing for the Playboy channel. Yeah.
Parts Unknown for the Playboy channel?
And I was just like, I mean, I saw that as like a dope gig. I'm like, you know, that's not what I want to do, like, career wise, but that's a fucking dope opportunity. You know, you get paid to go to the cities and just like explore the nightlife and shit. Like, that's awesome.
DJ Panky talking about your nightlife. Yeah. I mean, it's gonna get any better.
Okay. And I went to the first audition, and the one of the people behind the table, she goes like, do you have any hosting experience? And I go, no. She goes, okay, what's your following? And I went, what? She goes, never mind, and rolls her eyes.
Whoa.
And I went, all right, well, like, can I still audition? She goes, yeah, sure. And then I did the audition, and I think I really impressed them, because they were like, would you mind sitting outside for just like 5 minutes? And I went, yeah, that's usually a good sign. And then I came back in, and they're like, "All right, are you this would be the callback dates? This is when we're shooting. Is that all comfortable? Like, you know, are you good at like, do you know how to like use a camera?" And I was like, "Yeah, all that stuff." I didn't get it, obviously, but like, yeah. The fact that social media following is even a fucking factor in casting is horrendous. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, because it's all about free publicity. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah,
you want to be an actor? Start modeling.
Yeah, it's, following. There's a lot of ups and downs, and I think for you and me, we've talked about how like there's times where you fall out of love with the process.
Definitely.
But I even at my worst, like I think Bad Labor is one of like the worst experiences I had with my relationship to this whole thing. And when it was all over, I figured like, okay, I think now, like especially after all the time, after months of shooting it, I said, okay, I can remember why I liked it. Like when I saw like a shot go like better than I had expected, or when like there was just like a moment that wasn't scripted but that played between them two, and it was just like really great. So it's the little surprises and those little like nuggets of like gold moments that kind of keep you going, thinking like, okay, maybe I didn't have a great time, but this was at least
you
worth
just
it.
Gotta love it. Yeah, love right. What you do.
Yeah.
Nice.
Bottom line.
Quitting is the easiest thing in the world.
Mm.
Yeah.
Unless you're smoking.
I mean, like, except like, I mean, but like, career wise.
Yeah.
Career wise, quitting is the easiest thing in the world.
That's true.
So you just gotta have perseverance.
All
right. It'll feel better in the end.
Yeah.
My final fun question, and I didn't tell you this.
This
Chris.
Wasn't cleared with me.
Yeah, this was not cleared with Chris. I want to know, and feel free to take a little bit of time.
Sure.
But I want you three to pitch to me Bad Labor 2. Like, tell me what you would do for the sequel. And it could be, like, focused on your character. It could be like, oh, I would love the story to go this way. But I just want to hear your thoughts
on Bad Labor 2.
Bad Labor 2.
I'll go first. And I've told Chris several times.
They both give me ideas.
I don't think there should be a Bad Labor 2.
Yeah.
Not. I just, like... You know, I'm not a massive fan of sequels in general, and like I think like leave it a standalone. You know, Chris has told me several times like how he's gonna bring Stanley Tesla back, and I'm like, just
but
don't.
If there were to be a Bad Labor 2, picture this.
Yeah.
Picture this. The story is, you know, Teddy is out there and about alive, you know, killing and harassing young girls.
Yeah.
We can't allow that to happen.
No, we can't.
So Roberto ends up finding out that this thing is happening, and he can't pull himself to do it, but he knows he has to do it. And then he starts seeing the ghost of Stanley Tesla. He's like, Beto, you gotta stop him.
He came back, man.
You gotta stop him, Beto.
Beto,
I was telling you the truth. I was telling you the truth, Beto, and I'm dead.
I'm dead because of you.
Because of you. Beto,
and then it becomes
go.
Like, yeah, it's a buddy cop movie where
a buddy cop ghost movie.
Yeah, I love it.
That's kind of what this movie is. I've been saying it's like a Bad reluctant. Movie. Yeah, it's like a buddy cop movie because they're just like two people that like are put together in the situation that like wouldn't otherwise be there, but. They're just there's like a friendship that goes on.
I would be so down for that sequel. And then it becomes
like Rush Hour.
Yeah, and then it becomes like a superhero movie. It's like Beto puts his like the jacket back on. And then he gets a shit. Like he opens a
drawer. No, you have to show a training sequence when Beto's getting all
jacked.
Yeah, exactly.
And you see Stanley Tesla next to him, and the ghost of Stanley
like,
Tesla.
On,
you
come
can
on.
Do this, Beto. Pump the muscles.
Ghost tacos.
On the toilet.
On the toilet.
Pump the muscles.
Get a Beto. These things are delicious.
Pump the muscles.
And then he opens the garage door, and there's the shovel. He's just like, one last run.
And then Stanley's like, I don't got friends. I got family.
I do this for my family. Oh my god.
What's your character's name?
Johnny.
Johnny's a disease. And I'm the cure.
My name's Beto. Like it's a voiceover now.
I want to ask.
Where are you going?
Beto, I told you. Call me Beto.
I fucking love it.
There have been a couple people who've asked me on Instagram to ask each of you individually. What attracted you to your roles and what you had to do to prepare. And I'm curious too to like find out like what you took away from playing this character that you might have borrowed.
I submitted a question to you on
you
Instagram.
Did, yeah. Were there any on-set romances? Kevin's looking at Sal.
I definitely fell in love with your mom's chicken salad.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Damn.
That's not a euphemism. My mom really did serve chicken salad.
Oh, yeah, no. There's no joke there. Shout out to Chris's family for all the support.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, Tony's family too. They lending us the ranch. There was that scene where you didn't want to scream too loud because you didn't want to wake them up.
Well,
I'm out of pussy scene.
In the fucking torture scene, it's like 2 or 3 in the morning. Yeah. We're in the middle of nowhere, which is like the set. If I were to murder someone, I would go to where we went. And then Chris wants me to scream at the top of my lungs. And I'm like, dude, I'm real. Like, do the neighbors know?
And me scream help.
Yeah. Teddy's screaming help. And like, you know, like these people, like none of the neighbors know what the fuck we're doing.
Imagine just sleeping in like a your barn or whatever. And you're just like your peaceful, barn, and they just hear, help!
Yeah.
I'm not a pussy!
Yeah. It's fucking like roosters crowing like at our shouts. It was ridiculous.
Oh my god.
So what drew you to the characters?
Oh, well, I mean, any role with like enough meat is always a challenge, you know? And Stanley, like I've said, Stanley's like a very wild card character. And, you know, I've seen interviews with actors where, like, you know, if you ever have to play like a crazy character, you know, you have to find like the root, the grounded reality.
Yeah.
And I've said it in other times we talked about it that, like, with Stanley, like, the rooted reality that I went with is that, like, this guy's just fucking lonely. You know, like, he says it. Like in the desert scene, like I do this all the time. I'm a lone wolf, which, by the way, is probably my favorite scene.
that line, yeah. The little the eagle I threw in the background.
Yeah, so good. Eagle. It's like when I saw that for the first time, I was just like, "Fuck yeah,
that's going on the reel."
But yeah, you know, and I mean, like, listen. No matter who it is, when someone comes up to you and like says like, "Hey, I had you in mind for this role," that's always just like a dope, uplifting thing to hear, you know. And then like, I read it and I was like, okay, so like, what can I bring to this? Mm. And you know, like, I mean, I do a lot of comedy, so like, this was very different from everything I do. And I believe that, like, you know, the magic happens outside your comfort zone. So I'm like, I was like, all right, well, I'll give this a shot, and like, if I fuck up and fail, then I'll learn from my failure, and you know, if I hit a single or a double, I fucking hit a single or a double. Either way, it works in your benefit.
Yeah, that's one thing I'd really like to stress is that I knew he could be funny, so that's why a lot of the little zingers in there, I wrote him in his voice, so I knew he could handle that. But what I was curious about, because I'm like, all right, I know he's funny, but can he be scary? I used to wonder that all the time in class. I'm like, I'd like to see him just like totally like flip. Like his entire character to like this charming, funny guy to just all of a sudden this like fucking crazy psychopath.
My she'll probably be annoyed with me because she's in the next room. But when my girlfriend watched the movie, she got so horny after seeing me horribly fake fight that dude in the bar. She was just like, "I've never seen you that way."
I get hard for you when I see that scene, man. I was screaming in the theater, that shot where you get up from the pool table. I'm like, oh, like, yes! Because the way the music peaks in that moment is great.
In a t-shirt that's two sizes too small.
So animalistic.
Yeah.
What about you, Sal? What drew you to yours?
Well, I thought it was a neat role to explore because it was a feature. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it had different... It had an arch of emotions, you know, the father, the personal challenges of life, plus then adding this whole moral challenge of do the right thing, and then at the same time having in mind his family, which is the most important thing. It was good, and, you know, I thought that was great, and I just wanted to stay true to that.
That's cool. Yeah, and I think one of my favorite moments on set was when we were doing the... In the morning montage where you're singing in the mirror and you're just like brushing your teeth and you're doing like a bunch of like your whole like morning.
That's
routine.
My favorite scene where you're just like, hey, come on.
Where you're talking to yourself
in
the mirror.
Whatever you say in the mirror, you're like,
And because I wanted you to be singing a song, and so I remember I said, "All right, so you know, fix your hair, pull out like a pluck out a gray hair, or whatever." And then we concluded it with, "Okay, now sing a song." And one of my favorite things that you said, you're like, "Okay, what would Beto sing? What would Beto sing?" And like that made it feel like, "Oh, like wow, like he's taking it like serious. Like it isn't just okay, random song I heard on my way here. This song. It's like he's like, what would Beto sing? What would Beto sing?" And then he picked one, and it was,
"What did I sing?"
I don't know the name, but I know it goes Matara.
yeah, definitely. I thought that was a song he would sing.
Yeah,
that's a Beto song.
And Ted, I want to apologize / explain why we like left you out of a lot of like the promotional stuff, and why we were gonna do this podcast. We were just gonna do it with these two, but because that was before it was gonna
you
come
suck,
out.
Ted.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, I was really embarrassed of the. No, I'm just kidding. But we wanted to keep your storyline like super hidden. That's why like I didn't even have you like you said, "Can I put it out?" I'm like, "No, I don't want people to know that you're involved yet." And so now that it's out, now that everybody's seen it, like I'm really interested to dive more into with you about like what drew you to your part, aside from the fact that like I had sent it to you and everything, and like what you did to prepare and like what you took away from it, because I think it's
did you stalk
so
anyone in real life?
did you do that to be method?
Method, yes. No, I just, this character was just such a rebellious kid, and playing it like this kid is a douche.
Yeah.
So,
but I remember when we were working on it, I liked is that I treated you like you were right.
Yes.
Like that was I hope that helped, because I had read that like especially when like someone is on like the wrong side of the spectrum, like to treat them as if like they're doing the right thing, because then it's like you're not thinking, oh, I'm
it
doing
adds
this
to the
be
story,
because
otherwise you give the plot away in the
right.
beginning. Yeah.
Like when we were doing that scene in the car, we were trying to convince Roberto.
And you're like, you're the good guy.
Yeah, I'm like, you're telling him the truth. You're telling him the truth. Just tell him what's going on. Like you, Stanley is doing this shit to you, and you have to.
And that's what fed it, I felt, because everybody was convinced, and then they saw the end, and they were like, what?
Yeah.
Like my mom was like, you perv.
Shout out to Donna. She was very helpful. Thank you.
My boy. Why?
What they do to you.
What they do to you, my boy.
This is so awesome. There's just, yeah, I just felt like there were a lot of things to explore with this guy, with Johnny, and just every single thing he would do would almost domino effect the next thing, and then he'd hit the car, and then you'd get out and then take me in, and then I'd get out and then run away, and then just it would just keep going and keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
And this kid's life was nonstop.
Yeah.
I loved your wardrobe too.
Everyone had such iconic costumes.
Thank you.
I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Like every time I see that jacket that's hanging in Chris's fucking closet, I'm like, Beto.
I still have them with their original dirt and all, because we're gonna display them someday. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I was gonna make a joke saying it's gonna be in the ArcLight Cinemas one day.
That's what I hope for, or at least not in my offices. But that's another thing too, I wanted to explain, because I haven't had a chance to. But your costumes, like I remember, I particularly picked out like your jacket was an expensive jacket that my mom had just bought me, and she was like really excited because she spent a lot of money on it. I said, "Oh, I'm gonna have this be on a character that's rolling around in dirt, fighting on the street," and she's like,
jacket.
"Yeah, in this very jacket, isn't that cool? Because it looks cool on him." She's like, "Yeah, I guess that's cool, but I just bought it for you, and it's really expensive."
It's fine.
But that's where your costume came from. I've had that jacket that Roberto had for a long time, and I'm like, you know, this actually would look really cool on a day laborer. And I remember you told me, like, is it practical though? It's really hot to be wearing this jacket. I'm like, it'll look cool. It's gonna look cool.
A magical realist.
I remember when we had to do the reshoots, and Sal and I both showed up to set, and Chris like opened the trunk of his car and pulled out the jacket, and Sal just went, "This fucking jacket."
You're like, "I hate you,
Lord."
So I didn't get to say this during the recording, but that shirt that Johnny wears throughout the movie, the red Hawaii shirt, that was a shirt that I had gotten in Hawaii at a gift shop, where the idea had been conceived to make a feature, and which ended up becoming Bad Labor. That was also the place where I read Robert Rodriguez's book, Rebel Without a Crew, cover to cover. So like, aside from it just looking cool on him, I really liked that shirt would always serve me as a subconscious reminder of like, this was the place, Hawaii was the place where all this kind of came to fruition in your mind. So just as a funny little note. Okay, I'll go away now forever. Bye.
All right, so we're wrapping it up.
Yeah.
This was so much fun. Hearing Chris as just like the captain of the ship, like Kevin's explained, and just hearing all the actors' experiences and stuff, as an audience member and as a fan of Bad Labor, this was like super fun. Oh. It was super cool. But let's end it with everyone kind of just saying like what they're doing next or what they hope to do next. Because we, even though me and Chris started the Us podcast, like, as a general, talking about a bunch of arts and stuff, a lot of filmmakers listen to our podcast. So, like, what kind of projects do you hope to do in the near future? Just in case anyone's got any ideas bubbling and they'll be like, you know who'd be great for this? Stanley Tesla.
Yeah.
And shit like that. So what are you doing next? What do you want to do next? Let's hear it.
Blockbusters, Netflix shows, get us on something. All get three of us.
13 Reasons Why. Hit me up.
There's a second season now. Of that show?
Yeah.
Doesn't the girl kill herself in the first one? Mm-hmm. They're just going.
They're rolling with it.
They're just milking it. All
right.
She's a ghost in the second one. We were joking about that, but she's a ghost.
She's a ghost in the second one? Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. All right. Well, actually, I just booked a project, actually, which kind of circles back to what we were talking about earlier about how, like, there's a bunch of different factors that go into casting. So, I signed an NDA, but whatever.
but fuck it.
No, I just booked this gig with this agency I just started working with, and it's for, like, a web commercial. It's, like, a 30-second, like, Facebook thing. I think it'll be out by Thanksgiving. But the casting breakdown said holiday attire. So I contacted my agent and I said, like, Halloween or Christmas? She goes, Christmas. And I go, okay, would, like, a Christmas sweater be too much? She goes, if it's obnoxious, wear something a little casual. So I went to go get my wardrobe out, and I had a red flannel that I was going to wear. And then I decided not to, just because, like, I was like, I wear this a lot in auditions. And I have, like, this, like, deep red kind of burgundy cardigan, and I just wore it over a green t-shirt. Go to the audition, and it's me and these two girls, and we just sit down and we act like we have some props and we act like we're having dinner. The audition itself was probably like 45 seconds, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's how a lot of them are. When it's commercials and shit, yeah, it's very quick. That was it. We're done. And the next day, I got a call back for it. I was like, oh, man, I can't, like, couldn't have been, like, my performance. Like, we were only, you know what I mean? Like, you know? I go to the callback, and every other dude at that callback was wearing a red flannel.
Oh,
and
I went,
oh, man, I guarantee you I got the callback strictly because I wasn't wearing a red flannel, even though all these guys are. Then I booked it, and I went to the fitting, right? We had a day of fitting. Well, at that day of fitting, I didn't see any of the guys with the red flannel at that fitting. And we shot it yesterday. And I was like, I guarantee you I only got this gig because they probably saw hundreds of dudes in red flannels. And they saw me in a cardigan. And just was like, oh, that's different. Funny thing, when we filmed it, they had me in a flannel.
Typical.
Typical. Yeah. Hollywood.
Yeah, well, But I'm currently working on a horror comedy, actually, which has been pretty
funny. A feature?
Yeah, it's a feature film. It'll be ready by spring.
Whoa.
It's a horror comedy. It's pretty funny. Nice. The cast is very funny. It's a one location plot.
Are you gonna shoot it yourselves?
No, I mean, this is a different company. I auditioned for it. Oh,
okay.
And everything. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And what's really funny is that my character is in his underwear for about 90% of the movie.
Oh, right. I think you told me about this. Yeah.
Wow. So it's pretty funny. So it'll
come natural to you.
Well, it was... So the plot of the movie is pretty simple. There's a woman who's, like, a very, like, timid, shy woman. And it's her birthday. She leaves work. Her coworker's like, hey, what are you doing for your birthday? She's like, oh, nothing. She goes home, puts on, like, a very sexy dress, goes out on a Tinder date. Then, like, it cuts to me, her Tinder date, like, tied up, gagged, handcuffed, sack over my head in the garage.
Damn, you're getting a lot of girls hot right now.
Turns out she's a witch. And not only is it her birthday, it's her rebirthday. So every 400 years, she has to make a certain sacrifice before a certain time to live another 400 years. While she's prepping to do this ritual sacrifice on me in the garage, her coworkers come over to throw her a surprise birthday party.
Ooh, I love it.
And the hilarity ensues.
I fucking love it.
So, that sounds awesome.
That sounds batshit. That's awesome.
It's pretty funny. Like, the cast is incredibly funny. It's all in one house. But, yeah. So, like, I'm in, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie. And then you really don't see me for, like, 45 minutes. Like, there's, like, quick snippets of me trying to escape. And then, like... like, you know... I kid you not, dude. Like, my hands are tied up in a pulley, handcuffed. I have a burlap sack in a room with no ventilation. It was by far physically the most taxing day.
So bad labor prepared you.
Yeah. And then, like, I eventually escape, like, an hour into the movie. And, like, while all the shenanigans are happening inside, this just, like, bloodied, naked man just comes in. He's just like, help! Yeah. But yeah, that's what I'm currently working on. It's called Life's a Bitch and Then One Kills You. I did not make that title.
Wow. And Sal, you want to share what with are the you class doing? What you're doing right now?
At the moment, I'm moving, so that's pretty crazy. But I was lucky enough to get a part of Mayans.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, what? That's right. Fucking Mayans.
I did that over the summer, and it was great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's audition season, so just going out there, being prepared.
Did they film that in, like, Sun Valley?
Santa Clarita.
Okay, because I think I remember when they were filming Suns, they would film some shit, like, deep in the valley.
Yeah, yeah, Santa Clarita. So you go that way? Yeah, you go up north,
I feel like
northeast.
Santa Clarita was more closer to you.
No, it's
up north. Yeah, up north. So that's, there are studios over there.
Have you ridden a bike yet?
No, my character doesn't ride bikes.
Oh, he walks.
And he digs.
I'm gonna kill him.
Dude, straight up. I don't know if you saw, Sal posted a picture of him digging, but it was from Mayans.
Digging?
Yeah, you're digging. You have a shovel. You have a shovel.
And you're like,
and I wrote like, so your reputation from bad labor precedes you, I guess. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
there's
a picture
there's
of
a
shovel. A
picture of you with a shovel, and it's like, Mayans.
Yeah, Mayans MC on Tuesdays.
Your
or
Beto.
But yeah.
Your Beto work.
Beto's coming back for Mayans season 2.
That was your audition for Mayans. Do you know how to dig?
Please. Have you seen Bad Labor? That's all
Bad
I fucking
Labor?
Do.
The Chris
oh,
Carmona
yeah,
film?
But no. That's not for Mayans.
Oh, that's
from
not
another
Mayans?
Film that I did.
Oh, okay.
Where I actually... I do bury someone in that one, but that's not my end.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
So you're going to get typecast as the guy who buries
one.
People?
Yeah.
That one.
This is from a film that it's called Wind in the Night.
Okay.
It's a very neat short. Yep. And
that's fucking dope.
You guys should watch it.
Yeah.
It's pretty definitely. Good. No, the Mayans, it's... Mayans, I don't hold shovels. I hold... guns.
Oh, okay.
Dang,
oh, okay.
Right, he's replacing that shovel with a gun.
It'd be funny if you were just the one member of the gang that just wheeled
no,
a
he's
shovel.
The gun.
Yeah, exactly.
The next season when the writers watch Bad Labor, they're just going to give you the shovel.
They're going to be like, so your character's going to start digging. You're like, this fucking shovel, bro. It's like, don't worry, I have my own shovel.
I'll bring my own shovel.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Sons, what would they call it when they'd have to kill one of their members? Like, I think it's time for him to meet Mr.
I didn't watch the show.
Oh, I think it's time for him to... fuck it.
But fuck yeah. Everyone's doing dope shit.
Yeah.
And thank you for letting us interview y'all and for being such fun guests to have. And
you guys are getting a lot of like
fangirls. Being so hella talented.
Yeah, and you guys are getting a lot of fangirls already. Like there are so many girls
God.
Who write to me about
Mexican
Shia LaBeouf,
on Instagram.
About
oh
Kevin,
God,
about
Victor.
Stanley. I want Stanley to hurt me. I'm like, okay.
Follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
Follow
plug everybody plug your Instagrams and all your social handles.
My Instagram it's @ Chacon Sal.
Boom.
And
follow.
He's taking,
follow.
Sorry.
Follow. Help him with those auditions.
He needs that to...
Handles?
Yeah.
Oh, Teddy Stavros.
That's Teddy Stavros.
I'm Kevin Nelson, so my Instagram handle is I'm Kevin Nelson.
Oh,
yeah,
there you go.
Teddy Stavros, you have a ton of followers. You should give us a shout out.
Yeah,
give us a shout out.
Yeah, Teddy, shout out this fucking podcast.
Give
please.
Us a shout out so we can get.
I didn't have enough.
Give us the teen demographic.
Yeah. I didn't say you had enough.
I have a
Netflix
lot of,
doesn't think
I have a lot of gay men that DM me from my softcore porn stuff. So
yeah,
if I can get any new fans,
yeah. By the way, there is softcore porn out there of Kevin. If anybody's looking for
it. And with that, we're ending. Like, we ended on that. I used to do softcore porn. And that was the Us Podcast, everybody. Thank you so much.
You. Thank you guys for coming on. It's been great to see you.
As always, my name's Angel Salinas.
And I'm Chris Carmona.
And this was the Us Podcast.
With the cast of Bad Labor.
Woo! Boom, 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 boom. Play us off, Brandon Carmona. Boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. DJ Pancake.
Hey everybody, thanks so much for checking out the Us Podcast.
You can follow us on our Instagram at Us Podcast.
You can also follow us on our personal Instagrams. I am at @AngelISalinas_.
And you can follow me at the Chris Carmona.
Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcast from. Write us a review.
Please, that helps us out so much.
Say some nice things. Say some maybe not so nice things. Go ahead and tell us. Pleats. Pleats. All right. Bye. Bye. That sounded pretty good.